Hi, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of the Premier Football Podcast in 2022. Happy New Year to you. And joining me this episode, I've got Kel and Hata. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone.
I have to say, it hasn't exactly been a happy start to any of us on the podcast right now. It's been pretty rough few days if you've been a fan of Chelsea, Liverpool, or Arsenal, for that matter. I guess that's where we'll start our conversation first. The Premier League over the weekend. Mm-hmm. First game, Arsenal, Man City, Hata. I had to join you. I've never cheered so hard for Arsenal in the last 2 years.
Same here, man. Yeah, same here. Yeah. Singing their praises to the heavens.
I think everyone didn't want Man City to extend the lead, but they did.
You know how it was like previously it was ABU, right? Now it's like ABC.
I have to say, I think a lot of Arsenal fans, you know, in a rare moment, they did come out of the game feeling pretty good about themselves. I think it was a very positive performance. I've not seen many Premier League teams, if at all, being able to push and contain Man City the way Arsenal did over the weekend. So that's a massive positive. I think everyone's been talking about Arsenal being a flat track bully, taking on the weaker teams and winning, which is a step forward for this team. But the next test is if they could, you know, and no one's expecting them to win Man City, but I think they took the game to Man City. I think they look really positive. Even when they went one man down, which we'll talk about later, they still contained Man City very well. I mean, Man City didn't have a lot of chances against a 10-man Arsenal. So, overall positives, but obviously lots of refereeing talking points, as you can imagine. But I thought Arsenal were fantastic, you know. They were really good. Thomas Partey, I think this was his best game. He looked to dominate that midfield. He could carry the ball. He could shield the ball. He could redistribute it well. I mean, he was everywhere. I think the whole team had to be really proud of themselves. I think they were all really, really good. But I think, you know, questions have to be asked about the refereeing decision. So probably I'll go around the room and ask each one about the thoughts on each, you know, decision that has gone against or for Arsenal, mostly against. Yeah. Right? It felt like a lot of things went against Arsenal. So maybe Cal, first one was, which is Odegaard, right? So he got taken down by Ederson. Not so easy to see, I think. But VAR had a, you know, the video assistant referee had many different angles of views. But it wasn't overturned. So what was your thoughts on the Ederson tackle on Odegaard in the box?
That's where the whole inconsistency comes in, because he didn't was viewed by VAR, but he didn't go to the screen, as the referee didn't go to actually view it, right? Correct. So if you want to be consistent, you'd be consistent throughout. And
the Xhaka one went through a visit, right?
Yeah, through a decision and all that stuff. And and even for the Xhaka, I mean, for the initial one on Odegaard, it was a penalty. If you want to give the one for Xhaka, you're going to give the one for Odegaard as well. It doesn't make any sense if they're doing this flip-flopping kind of decisions, and that kind of just went, you know, I think once you don't get that rub of the green, that's it, you know, it can go against you. And even at the game as a whole, I think second half, it was just every Arsenal foul or thereabouts was a yellow card for Xhaka, Gabriel, Saka, holding, just yellow card after yellow card. But for Rodri, I think he only got his yellow card. He's been fouling consistently.
Yeah, he had a really awful foul, I think on Lacazette, right? He just smashed Lacazette.
He smashed into him, and that was a yellow, straight yellow, but hey, he got like 90.
Became a corner. It was a corner.
Exactly. And I mean, that's where the inconsistency comes. And even for the Ricardo Silva, that wasn't, it's such a light penalty. It's so...
You think so? I thought that was a penalty.
I mean, it was a penalty, but the dive with the hand up straight going down.
I think it was Xhaka's tug. I think that was an incriminating.
Yeah, but we've seen worse in the box. We've seen worse. It was, to me, very, very soft.
Harold, so both penalty decisions. Odegaard, was it a penalty?
Odegaard, I think, was a penalty. It should have been a penalty, right?
Especially when you look at the camera took the view from the front of Odegaard. The foot from Ederson coming in and hitting his foot first, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't see where the argument of, you know, the referee not making a clear and what's the term that they use?
Obvious
clear and obvious error, right?
Yeah.
So how is that not a clear and obvious error?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. I mean, the way I see it is this whole VAR referees, you know, your assistant referees, your fourth official by the side, right? It's somewhat created a hierarchy of sorts within the officiating team for that day. So you have the man on the pitch, the main referee, right? And it sort of tapers down in a pyramid to the people below him. So everything else boils down to what he says and whether he is making a clear and obvious error or not, right? I think there's a problem there because somehow I feel like more and more we are seeing this propagating of this referee superstar, you know, for lack of a better term, right? You've seen in previous years, right, you know, you've seen referees elevated almost to the level of the players in terms of how known they are. I won't say infamous, lah.
Closer to infamous.
First you had Pierluigi Collina, right? Then you had Howard Webb, you had Mark Clattenburg, and now you've got all the other referees coming up. I don't know. I mean, are they looking... You have to also wonder, are they also looking to build up their name so that, you know, after their refereeing careers are over, there's something else for them as well?
Entertainment value rather than...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's my worry, you know, like, are they making the decisions just for that little bit of sensationalism, or are they making, you know, decisions for the true spirit of the game? I mean, that's my concern in this whole VAR thing. I mean, the best scenario, the way I see it, is the whole referee officiating team works as a team.
Yeah. Because right now they're bowing down to the almost like the ego of the main referee, because he's obviously we can overrule him. He still has the one power. So there's a bit of pride involved, right? As opposed to everyone is just in service of the game.
Yeah. Right? So if the VAR spots something, right, it's almost like you can hear them, you know, in behind the monitors wondering, did the referee make a clear and obvious error with that one? I don't really want to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Get on his wrong side today or something.
Yeah.
I mean that's just me, lah. I mean this whole weekend has been you look at the Spurs game as well, right? There were some dubious calls there also, but
I think I've always kind of questioned it is, you know, players get interviewed post game. Managers get interviewed, or assistant managers get interviewed. Why not interview the refs as well, just to get their take on a call or something? You know, where you, if they want to be this figure, like Anthony Taylor, for example, they want to be this figure of limelight of in the media, right? Okay, and if you want to be that figure, you go through the same steps and process everybody else does. Explain certain key decisions. If the questions are actually posed to you on how you, on what was a red card or what was a penalty, wasn't a penalty, just to put all these points back across, so it kind of clears up the air for the fans post-game as well, right? They can do it the last interview of the thing, 15, 20 minutes when everyone is done. They can do that as well. So I think the referees have to start being more accountable instead of just hiding behind the association or hiding behind the figurehead, because certain calls don't make sense at all. Like for the game, like the Arsenal game, I just felt in a way, you don't want to say it, but it just felt that whatever Arsenal did was going to be a foul. Referee was happy to show cards, and certain decisions very inconsistent. Even in the Spurs game is one as well, but even in the few games that we've seen in the Premier League, where fouls are just given randomly, and what is a penalty is not a penalty. In this game, it's a penalty. In the next game, so this level of inconsistency, I think you start having referees owning up and giving explanations in their words, then we can see what they actually are doing and what their train of thought is in the entire process.
I mean, the way I see it, it's almost like you have a police force that has no accountability there.
Exactly. They just hide behind the main head, right? The association, the referee association, and that's it. They just put a statement out. And you've seen Klopp had a go at the referee as well, right? He said all the referees are fine except you. I don't like you. or you don't like me. That kind of, that's how personal people are taking it these days. Because it matters. You know, 1 point, a penalty given away can make you lose 3 points, can make you lose 2 points. That kind of thing, it affects the table as a whole. And this is high stakes as we're playing in the Premier League.
So moving away from enough of the penalty talk, right? So let's try to look forward to ask ourselves also. Based on that performances by both teams, where do you think Arsenal will end up at the end of the season? And where do you think Man City will end up at the end of the season? Hyrule first?
I think Arsenal will be in the running for the fourth spot, at least. Right? It seems with this Arsenal, Spurs, West Ham, maybe Man U.
I think Man U can push. I think they can push. Purely from the fact that they have so much
talent. From the fact that they are Man U.
Talent,
and they have games in hand also. They got two games. Right? They're about 4 points behind, but two games in hand.
Yeah. But my question, Hatta, is this. You know, a lot has been said by how young this Arsenal squad is, right? Do you think that youth, a little bit of that naivety sort of shown when the referee calls weren't going their way, that sort of got to the head of the players, right? When, especially when you saw how Gabriel got sent off.
Gabriel was the naive one, right? He was the naive one, yeah. For sure. I think, it still was not clear what he was first booked for. I think a lot of people said it was for scuffing up the penalty spot and trying to delay time. I think they also interviewed the assistant manager and said, no, it wasn't for that. It was for something that he said, which was really nothing different from what most people were saying. You know, they were complaining and all that. So maybe he was just the victim of, he was the last guy to approach the ref. And the ref just had to book someone just because, a lot of Arsenal players were kind of appealing.
Basically, he became the final straw.
Yeah, he became the final straw, right? And which is unfair. But I think that was what happened. Then, things got heated. I mean, it was a good, very eventful 1 minute, if you think about it, right? Because after that, they booted the ball up. Gabriel got blocked. He almost scored, right? He got blocked by the referee. And then on the counter-attack Ederson pumped the ball up to Gabriel Jesus into the center circle, and it was Gabriel, who was right behind Gabriel Jesus, both Gabriels. And he kind of obstructed Jesus when he spun and turned, and that was the second yellow card. So it was a very short period of time where I think tensions were high, and he was responsible for those moments. And honestly, I thought that second yellow card was a bit soft. I thought that was, I guess, amber, orange, whatever you call it, but not a second yellow, not a red, because I thought Gabriel Jesus kind of spun and fell a bit too early and too quickly and too easily, but I think Gabriel was he kind of took the bait lah, for lack of a better word, right? I think he didn't have that maturity, and I hope after this game I think they have a bit more of a level head. I mean, for the most part it is a young team, but it's quite a, I mean, it's not nasty in a bad way, but they play with a decent amount of positive aggression. You look at how Tomiyasu, just coming back from COVID, matching up against Raheem Sterling, who has always tormented Arsenal. Ben White and Gabriel, all of them have been really good. Tierney as well. So I think it's been overall quite positive. I don't think they're that naive. I think these kind of small moments in the big games can happen and can flash. You kind of saw it over the weekend, but I don't think they were that naive overall. But these are still learning points, because they will have lessons to learn. And I think this is something for Gabriel to learn. And don't forget, I think Gabriel, out of most of the defenders, I think he's the most impetuous and he's the most most front-footed defender, right? He's a get behind the backs of the striker and push hard and nick a quick tackle type, right? So he's also most susceptible to that kind of flashes of tempers and emotion. So I hope it's a learning point. I think he has greatly improved this season. So they can only learn. And I don't think they would be open to a lot of this kind of emotional baiting that much. I think the temperament of this team is quite solid. But these things will happen. and I'm not too worried about them being too naive. For the most part, I think they've done pretty well with positive aggression.
I think I sort of hijacked your question on where you think Arsenal would finish up, right?
Ooh. So, yeah, no, I wanted to ask everyone else, right? So yeah. less bias. But for me, I think, I don't know, because we talk about Man United, Spurs, and Conte are getting stronger. You know, you still have West Ham. I think they might struggle a little bit, so it won't be easy. But I think my heart says fourth place. My head says fifth or sixth, which is the Europa League spot. I'm just worried about African Cup of Nations and losing Thomas Partey and Elneny. Okay, Elneny doesn't play that much. Pepe can come on. I mean, they're going to be quite a lot of games and they could use Pepe in some of those games. So, you know, I am worried about those departures. And there's talk about Maitland-Niles leaving for Roma. If Maitland-Niles stays, that's only three centre midfielders with Granit Xhaka, who's played almost every game since his early return from injury, from a serious injury, right? So that's a worry too. And then you have Lokonga, who's had a good rest. And then Maitland-Niles, if he's leaving, I don't know, there's just not enough bodies, right? So that's a big worry. Maybe Edu has, you know, a temporary loan signing that might come in January, but I have no idea. So this is a very interesting and exciting time for Arsenal fans. But I think if Arsenal finish fifth, I think if you take a step back, you'd be like, okay, that's, you know, I think at the start of the season, if you offered Arsenal fans or even Mikel Arteta, you can finish fifth, I think he would snap your hand and say, okay, I'll take it. But if you were to end up fifth or sixth at the end of the season, after seeing how far they've come, it might feel a bit, a slight disappointment, as you can imagine, because you've seen them grow and move so much and so fast. So I don't know. I think my head says fifth or sixth. My heart says I think we can do fourth, just about.
Cal, what do you think about Arsenal's fortunes for the second half of the season?
I mean, given that they don't... Yeah, we see squads being affected by COVID and injuries and stuff like that. And also you look at the likes of...
Except for Man City.
Except for Man City. but on the flip side, Man City only has 18 first team players. So if they get hit, they're going to get hit hard. So to me, it's like, I don't think the race is over for the title on that sense. But for the top four positions, I mean, Arsenal just focus on the EFL and the FA Cup. It's all domestic titles. Traveling and all the issues are actually safer. And they do have... You're starting to see the squad gain the experience and the confidence. Yeah, they're definitely young. They miss an experience yet. But I think Lacazette has stepped up in the past few games. Been a bit more of a leader than most thought he could. So that's one. Spurs are also inconsistent. Spurs can win 3-0, 4-0, and then just draw the next game, you know, and really with no attempts on goal and a lucky shot goes in. And Sun is also off form recently as well. So that's on that front. West Ham squad-wise is also quite thin. You know, they really have one recognized striker in Antonio. So it's really up there. But I think Arsenal, if they keep pushing it, their fixtures are actually quite kind to them in a sense where they play teams that have nothing to win or lose in the table. You know, they play United, I think, at the tail end of the season. And in between, they've got the likes of Brentford, those in the middle tier of the table, Brentford, Aston Villa, all those guys who are not really fighting for points that desperately. You know, so that gives them a bit of a somewhat of an easier route towards getting that fourth spot. And also what makes us think that Chelsea's going to stay or Liverpool going to stay, that they might even drop as well. So I think Arsenal are in a much better position and you see them evolve from the start of the season to now. And I think they're actually going to get a bit better. They're going to get a bit more aggressive. I think the place is going to get a bit more aggressive. The January transfer window is open. So we're not sure if Arsenal's going to do a quick loan deal or something to just spice it up in that sense. So I think they have a shot. I think they have a better shot than Spurs or even West Ham right now. It's just how they maintain that because they're already in fourth, right? So how does Arsenal maintain that momentum moving forward? So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they finish fourth as well.
And imagine if Aubameyang comes back to score. I mean, he hasn't been playing.
Nah, I think he's a goner. I really think
he's a goner. He's a Mesut Ozil situation, I think.
Yeah, he's in the same mood as a Lukaku, I would say.
I don't think he is. I think Lukaku I think is comparable, but I think Aubameyang has slowly crept into Mesut Ozil territory, and he's just waiting out for the rest of the season.
Right? It's because of the bumper contract, I guess.
Hard to say. Hard to say, but you know, I think it's. I'm cautiously optimistic about Arsenal, but I just can't help but look at the Conte factor and the United talent factor.
Conte's going to ship players already. He's already made it quite obvious. He's going to talk to the board about it. He's already got his list of players he wants and players he doesn't want based on what he's seen in the past 2-3 months.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting for them as well. And United is, you know, Jekyll and Hyde. We all know that. This season is Jekyll and Hyde. Regardless who's at the wheel. It's a very, you've got players who shrug their shoulders, put their head down and don't fight. And then it seems very disconnected the group for now.
If we move on to Chelsea, Liverpool, I guess I should hand over the interrogation spotlight to Hatta. You know, floor is all yours. You can ask either of us anything you want about the game.
Hatta. But what a game.
It was quite a game. Okay, let's begin the interrogation. So question, it looked pretty even. I mean, it was like a basketball game, right? Back and forth, back and forth. Maybe you start with Harold. Do you think that the draw was a fair result?
Yeah, I think all in all it's a fair result. But unfortunately, you know, where Liverpool are, where Chelsea are in the standings, right? COVID has, you know, has affected the course of this season quite a fair bit, lah. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, people can say, you know, fans are back in the stands and all that, but the squads are heavily affected by COVID. Liverpool's squad yesterday, we didn't have Matip. Robertson would have been playing on the left flank had one of the games not been cancelled because of COVID. And the midfield could have been stronger. We could have Firmino, you know, as another option for the front line as well. So a lot of things. And I'm sure Cal will say the same thing about Chelsea also, because, you know, if it weren't for COVID, I'm sure you wouldn't have suffered so many draws at home prior to this.
It's also COVID, but also more of our own doing as well. Like Chelsea has just suffered with the whole, because in every season there's always drama at Chelsea. You don't go one season without drama at Chelsea Football Club. Maybe players, managers, something somewhere. We've seen it with the whole Lukaku fiasco. You know, I mean, having him up front would have been a difference. I think could have made a difference. But now, all in all, I don't think it mattered, because the players play faster without him. I feel personally, I've always said that the Chelsea play faster without Lukaku up front. And it was like really a basketball game. You're right, end to end stuff. Liverpool had Jota, Mane, and Salah, and Chelsea had Pulisic, Kovacic, and Kai Havertz as well, doing the damage on the set with Mason Mount as well. So I think it was a really good game. Draws a fair result. And yeah, COVID has hampered. Like, you imagine if you're a manager, you go for training and you're not sure who's going to turn up, and you work with what you have that turns up. That is not a proper way to prepare for a game, especially a Premier League game with such intensity.
Yeah, and the problem is you're not sure, you know, who's going to be available for you on match day itself.
You can go with a formation, everything planned ahead, and then stuff happens.
Cal, is Salah the best forward in Europe right now? That goal, amazing.
Without a doubt. I mean, I'm not a Liverpool fan. I'm not by stretch of imagination. And the goal, obviously, fantastic, right? How he left Kovacic and Alonso for dead. Alonso couldn't do anything at all. And the finish, a little, you're finishing against a keeper who we thought covered all the angles. Just a little dink, and that's all he did to do. And
that feint. Yeah. Right, yeah.
And the celebration was class. He just like put his hand, just like he didn't bother celebrating. He just moved on and carried on with the game. But it just shows that, you know, even if Salah wasn't on his game, I think Mane came at a point to prove. Mane was like a man from 9 seconds in on that elbow. And he was a man on a mission.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. He's a man on a mission. He was really fighting for the game, you know. And that goal that he got, you could see the aggression. He just wanted a goal. And Salah didn't have the best games. I mean, the best game in the first half, but he did his, you know, that goal just showed that he's very unique in a sense where you have a player who doesn't need to be on form or the best, but can just nick you a goal like that out of pure magic. So to me, he is the best. And like I said, giving it to the likes of anyone else, any award or recognition, is you've got to put a really strong argument for Salah.
So you mentioned that Mane was charged up for the game. Hyrule, do you think that was at least a bookable offense that was
we talked about, you know, amber and orange territory, right?
Yeah.
And we've seen people sent off for less.
Right. Jaka. Yes.
Yeah. So I think to Mane's benefit that it happened within the first few seconds of the game.
Mm.
Right. The referee didn't want to set, you know, a different tone for the remaining 90, 95 minutes of the game when just by sending Mane off. Mm. It wasn't the worst of elbows also, lah. He was jumping, using it somewhat as a leverage, and also the elbow was there also to protect himself, lah. I don't think he had 100% malice behind it.
But I think it was a very cunning move.
It's a cunning move. But it's Mane, you know. He's been on the end of things. He's dished it. He's dished it out also. Yeah. I'm just grateful, you know, that the two Africans up front, you know, gave us a going away present before they leave for the AFCON Cup of Nations. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who do you think could fill in those gaps? I mean, those are two massive holes, right? Down those flanks. And those two are the main forwards.
Yeah. I mean, next game is against Arsenal Friday morning, right? In the EFL Cup.
Yeah.
Jota is still around. Firmino, hopefully, if he recovers from COVID soon enough. Chamberlain, I mean, Minamino and Origi are still out injured. Yeah. So not COVID, but they're out injured. But I think from the last press conference, Klopp said Minamino is back running, and that was on Friday. So maybe he'll figure in EFL Cup. Seems to be his favorite tournament right now.
First leg, yeah.
Yeah. So it's hard to say. I mean, I'm sure there'll be a lot of youth players who are figuring into the equation for Liverpool against Arsenal on Friday morning. Same goes for Arsenal also, I think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they are losing four key players. Maybe not all key. Aubameyang, Pepe, who has played really well in these kind of,
Isn't Pepe games. Away?
Yeah. So we're losing them, right? So we're losing these guys. And Thomas Partey, who just looked like the world-class player that he should be. Mm. And Elneny, who could and should fill in, you know, during these cup games, right? And also, that's a concern. But I think so far, touchwood, I think so far Arsenal's players have come back from COVID and the injury scenario isn't that bad. I'm just wary about, you know, running the current first team players into the ground. I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at Saka and Martinelli and Odegaard and Smith Rowe. So, it might be an interesting game. A lot more youth than expected or than that would like, blah. But especially for such a big game. I mean, I know the Carabao Cup is not considered a big game, but I think if there's a trophy to be won in the latter stages, like semi-finals, I think they should go all the way. I mean, this is why you're in sports, right?
To win the medals,
even if it's a small medal, right?
It's just three more games, right?
Three more games to winning a trophy, and there's only so little trophies out there, and so many teams. So yeah, they should be going for it, and it'll be interesting to see. But I don't know. I think Liverpool might struggle during this 1 month without their two forwards. I might be wrong. Maybe the others can come in, Minamino and Firmino and all these guys, but they're going to be a big loss. But I think Liverpool can still kind of scrape through it.
Chelsea faces Spurs, right, Cal?
Yep, Conte Spurs.
Any chance of Lukaku featuring in that game?
So here's the thing, Lukaku's now been heavily rumored to join Spurs.
Nah.
Because of the Conte connection.
It's not going to happen.
Conte connection, but also the fact that he has this whole thing with Thomas Tuchel and the board, I think it goes beyond Tuchel. What he said to Sky Italia, it goes beyond that as well. So
in defense of what's his name of
Lukaku,
right? No, that interview was mostly for Sky Italia to talk about his departure from Inter, right? So a big chunk of that was actually to address what was happening in Inter, but the English media picked up that small chunk, which is about...
Anyone know what language the interview was done in?
Italian.
Might be Italian, yeah.
Italian. The issue with Chelsea was he wasn't given permission, first of all, to do that interview. And then also the fact that he said
he wasn't correct.
I think he wants to go back to Inter, and he wanted the Chelsea training kit, right? He wants to go back to Inter at in his prime. And the fact that
it'll be sooner than later or something like that.
And Thomas Tuchel wasn't playing him to his strengths and things like that. So it's a bit, I mean, not a bit, it's actually disrespectful to the coach.
Was there any chance that something was lost in translation there?
No,
I don't think so.
Apparently,
I don't think so.
It's clear as day.
He meant to talk about his return and his love for Inter.
Yeah, so basically he said sorry to the fans because he never said bye to them properly. He hopes he'll come back one day soon when he's on form. He's not happy at Chelsea because Tuchel's not playing him to his best. It's what was agreed when they signed. And all these things. And funny enough, the voice that is the loudest right now in the media is the old Paulo Di Canio.
Oh, yeah.
Paulo Di Canio has been a very vocal about Lukaku, and he said to me, because it just seems like someone who's just whining and whinging. And yeah, maybe Thomas Tuchel didn't play to his strengths initially, but in the past few games, Thomas Tuchel has been letting Lukaku do that run behind, and he's gotten the goals. So Di Canio kind of said that he's pretty much a player who's spoiled, who is just complaining, has a weak mindset, who gives too easily, basically.
I think the next best thing for Lukaku is, because no one's going to be able to afford to buy him at this point. Yep. I feel
no.
He just needs to put his head down. Just free.
Is there any chance that the interview was done before he started having a run in the team?
Correct.
Yeah.
So this was done three to four weeks ago. So
3 to 4 months, or was it weeks back?
Weeks ago.
It was weeks
so,
back. Yeah.
So he only in the last week managed to get his run back to the team, right? So it's been, last week has been pretty solid for him, and he was, he's getting back into the team and performing well and getting into a groove again, and all the complaints about not finding a tactical solution for him, I think they managed to find some kind of solution for him, right? And he, which has allowed him to play a bit better, more fluently, and then the interview came out. So, which is why I think Tuchel wasn't too happy, because I think he might come and say, look, I've already decided to work on a plan for you, and you are thriving. It's just really, really bad timing. The smart thing to do for everyone is just to put your heads down and just move forward. I would think, yeah, that's the smartest thing that I guess Chelsea and especially Lukaku has to do. Just no more talking.
Yeah, you know, I'm not saying it's the end of the road for Lukaku as a fan, but obviously it's disrespectful, one thing. And, you know, and also, but it shows the changing of times at Chelsea, because Chelsea has always been a very pro player power club. The likes of, you know, Drogba, Cech, Balak, they used to run the club at times, right? And getting men just sacked and fired.
Well, Cech is sort of running the club now.
Right? Yeah, he's running the club from the top, but now to see the likes of Thomas Tuchel taking such a big to leave him out of the... Even I thought putting him on the bench would have been a fair enough thing. Let him go on the pitch. He's caught the winner. Everything is forgotten and forgiven. But I think to drop him completely shows a very big step by Thomas Tuchel. And obviously, he wouldn't have done it without support from the likes of Marina, who works hand-in-hand with Roman as well. So, I don't know. I think can Lukaku come back and score and get the result? Maybe against Spurs, hopefully. But if he doesn't feature against Spurs, then something is definitely up somewhere. It doesn't make us. We're already playing with a player who's back from injury from COVID in Kante, letting him sleep for 10 hours straight and putting him back on the pitch. You know, we need fresher players to come on.
Oh, he was very fresh last night.
Dude, Kante is such a gem.
Yeah,
he was everywhere, man. He was shuttling, and he was the almost like the pressure lever, right? So whenever
the Liverpool midfield just couldn't touch him.
And he was the best number seven since Figo. The little touch to Pulisic to run through. I was like, hey, Kante can do everything.
I saw there was something from, I don't know, were there something said by the other players post-match with regards to Lukaku's absence?
Chelsea players too. I think no one said anything. Just that we know that actually Thomas Tuchel spoke with Thiago Silva, Azpilicueta, Mendy, And certain key players as well in the squad on why he decided to drop Lukaku. So that's primarily it, and no one spoke about it, from what I know. It's just the pundits who are just waving and hammering Lukaku and say he crossed the line and stuff like that.
Kel, you think that the title's not wrapped up yet, right? Even though some bookies have already paid out for Man City in the UK.
Yeah, not. There's another 17 games more to go, right? And COVID, and then you put Champions League and you put that into perspective. I really find it hard that every club has gone through a blip. Unless City is God's favorite club, and they don't get injured or get COVID and fine, but they're going to go through a blip. They're going to go through a slump. And we saw that the first half against, we saw glimmers of it in the Leicester game, right? The second half, where Leicester just, every attack was a goal. Then you saw a bit more of it, 45 minutes of it, or even more, in the game against Arsenal. Man City showed up, strength in numbers, but that's it. And also, don't forget, they've got Mahrez out as well. He's gone with Algeria to the F1s, you know, and their squad is not, it's also a bit of injury-prone players here and there. It's not a very big or fast squad. They've got 18 players. They've let Ferran Torres go as well. So down to 18, 17 players, right? So if they do some business in the transfer window, fair enough. But if they don't, I really don't see how they can sustain this winning streak, because they have been starting to falter a bit here and there. And then it comes to the question is, you know, Pep, he starts thinking too much. Do I focus more on Champions League for the game, but the Premier League, all these things will start adding up eventually, plus COVID and injuries. So I don't think it's done and dusted yet. I still think there will be another twist in the tail to make it a bit more exciting and close. And it's how the rest catch up and try to put a bit more pressure on it. Because I seriously believe that.
Hatta, you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I do. It's hard to say. I think AFCON will you know, the AFCON and this winter transfer window will be a big factor. But I have to agree with Kel though. I do, for the most part.
I just think so. I think the league has a long way to go, and clubs can spring a surprise as well, right? We've seen the recently promoted clubs like Brentford give other clubs a run for their money. You know, and don't forget the clubs in the relegation battles as well. When they need points, it always kind of works out in their favor in the end, getting the streak. So it's still there. It's just how much Pep thinkers.
Still, I think will be, but I think for the most part, I think they might have some small fumbles. And I think Liverpool, Chelsea, and maybe whoever's fighting for fourth place can catch up a little bit. But ultimately, I think they'll still finish ahead, I feel. There might be some movements with second, third, fourth a little bit. But I think, yeah, Pep could continue going ahead. I mean, they're pretty settled. They're the most settled of the bunch as well, I would feel.
I think another spanner in the works could be the upcoming FA Cup matches, because a lot of the Premier League teams, right, are drawn to play teams in the lower divisions. And, you know, we've heard of how their vaccination record with regard to, you know, how their players are, you know, are vaccinated or not, right, is much lower than that in the Premier League, considering, you know, even the Premier League itself is not the greatest, has the greatest of records.
I guess Carl's right also when he mentioned earlier that, you know, City's squad is relatively small. COVID could be the... COVID could be the equivalent of the Formula One safety car, right? The leveler, right? I think COVID could be that card.
Yeah. I just heard of the, I think earlier today, I heard about the story of Middlesbrough in the Championship, right? Where they played, I think, Blackpool over the weekend or a few days ago. And then now they can't play their next game after that because they've got 19 players testing positive all of a sudden. And they've got to cancel their game against Sheffield United.
Nasty.
That can happen to any Premier League team, actually.
It could. Yeah. Just tonight, I mean, you know, Maguire's out, team captain, against Man United against Wolves. So, yeah, you'll come up with all these randoms which could really roll the dice and see what happens. Yeah. But I don't know. I think City's the most settled team also, though. So that's a very good reason to go for them. But I think COVID could be that rolls the dice.
The safety car.
The safety car. That's right.
I mean, it's our, well, we have our own points of view with regards to COVID and, you know, the best way to recovery and all that, right? Us here in Singapore, it could be us, you know, imposing our points of view to England or and the UK, which might have a different approach to how things are over there. They may view things differently. So it is what it is, I guess.
I think they've also fully embraced the endemic status a lot more than us in Singapore. I was speaking to one of my clients who's based in the UK, and she was like, you know, I was like, be safe, you know, I hear that the infection rates are really high, but she says that, you know, it's not like what it was at the start of the pandemic. It's a lot of them are asymptomatic, so it's not so bad, and I think that's the same. But I, you know, that's kind of like the same in the Premier League as well. So no one's really suffering an attack to the lungs. And I think there's also news recently about how Omicron kind of avoids the lungs altogether. So maybe it's not as serious, but the big impact is the absence of the players for about a week or so, right? So I think that's a big leveler, yeah.
I mean, the best case scenario is, of course, it's mutating into another flu virus kind of disease, lah. Yeah, but...
yeah. It's a regular flu instead of a
hardcore
flu, if you know what I mean.
Well, let's turn our hardcore flu. Tell me today, what are you done with?
Hardcore flu, man.
Man, that's rough. Hardcore, yeah. Man.
I'll wait till it turns softcore very soon.
Wait, we're supposed to be talking about the flu, right?
We are.
Okay,
just a euphemism for other forms of entertainment.
Turning our attention to Singapore, the EFF Suzuki Cup, you know, reached its culmination over the weekend, and Thailand won with an aggregate score of 4-2. I mean, unsurprising.
6-2.
Sorry. Yeah, 6-2. Unsurprising, I think. But I guess from most Singaporean football fans, the more important thing is, where is Singapore football going to be in 2022? We don't have a technical director. We don't have a coach. What's going to happen to us in 2022? Any thoughts, guys?
I think settle the backroom staff first. Let's settle who we want to bring back. Because like I said time and time again, we've got many Singaporeans all over the region, you know, working with other nations in really high footballing positions in terms of directors, youth development, all these part of the whole ecosystem of football fraternity in those countries as well. They're like the syndrome. Vincent Subramaniam has gone through, 52, 54 countries or something like that, developing football in those countries. So I think hopefully we can tap on those experience hits and see what they can offer. See what they can build, put them forward as well, because, you know, having a local coach with local players and someone who's played the game and won the jersey, who is now has experience coaching, would be a good start as well. And we've seen how Singapore coaches who won players have gone to Qatar, have won titles, have gone overseas and won titles as well. So maybe it's time for us to start looking inward and try to build out what the roles are, what the whole point of the roles are, what are the expectations of those roles, and, you know, and actually where we want to go, because it doesn't make sense, right, to get through the semis and then start all over again and like rebuild the team and rebuild the manager. Just get someone who's maybe has done it and try to get a much more long-term view of it as well. And, you know, as much as he's left already, Tatsuma, he's gotten a job back at his previous post. But I think also it comes back to the fans, right? I think someone who can deal with the media and actually deal with the Singapore football fans' expectations as well. So someone who we all may have known, or the older fans might have known as a player, we might be given more sympathy and more time to certain results. So maybe that's where they should be looking at and putting their heads together and say, okay, how do we move forward? What can this person bring for football, not only in terms of the team, but maybe in terms of media exposure as well, a bit of buzz back in the footballing crowd in Singapore. So, yeah.
I think before they go into all these specifics, we all kind of forgot the Unleash the Raw program.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about
which is supposed to be...
They also forgot about it.
which was meant to be the broad overarching project for the next 5-10 years, right? So and the last we heard about it, it's still very scant in details. Now, you know, whichever politician or MP or whatever government official who get started on that, I think they need to make sure that they find a director of football who could fill those gaps and could build on that strategy, whether the guy likes it or not, right? I think they've got to find a guy, they've got to find someone who is in agreement and can build that same roadmap. Because you know that's what you need a director of football to be and to do. I do wonder, you know, I kind of do wonder also about, you look at Roberto Martinez in Belgium, and how he has doubled up between being the head coach of the national men's team, their senior team, and also doubling up as their director of football and helping oversee, you know, their long-term development and long-term structures of Belgian football. Maybe it might make sense to get someone who could do both. I mean, if you think about a head coach role, that's almost like a part-time job, right? Because, you know, the times that you actually play international games are very rare. And Singapore isn't like England or Germany or Italy or whatever, right? I mean, we're not at that level of development. So maybe someone could do a
in between international, yeah, in between international games, you don't have that many games to watch anyway.
You don't, right? And it's again, it's not like you're preparing for the World Cup or whatever. You know, so why can't we get this person to also kind of work towards developing the structures and yeah.
So get like Adil Sharin and Akbar Nawaz?
Possibly. I don't know enough about the talents that we have.
I mean, yeah.
But you know, I think it's sometimes it's not about the guys on the ground, the director of football and the coaches. That sometimes a big part of it's often the structures within FAS. Even the structures that we spoke about, you know, Unleash the Raw, which is the main program that we're looking to run, you know, that still has lots of gaps, right? There are talks about La Liga and Dortmund and all these things, but it's still very scant on the main meat of the program, right? So that's something they have to clear first, whether it's a director of football, whether it's, you know, one of their guys in FES, they've got to find someone to develop that, right? Because that's the meat of Singapore football.
I remember there was something reported around the Unleash the Raw structure, something about restructuring the football team, at least of the or the Singapore schools, or rather the competition for the Singapore schools, where certain schools would be like supported by the FAS, and you know, where they are like they have a better through flow, or you know, football players in those schools have more opportunities to train or what have you, right?
So in the words of most Premier League managers, I can't comment on speculation, right? Right, you gotta let us see it, right? You gotta make good with it, not just talk about, oh yeah, it would be nice to have this, it would be nice to have that. No, if you gotta have the balls and be a leader and own it and do it, right? Enough talking.
Yeah, so apparently they have earmarked certain schools.
Oh, which ones and why them?
St. Patrick's.
Well, yeah.
St. Pat's.
So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 schools.
Okay.
So in the east, St. Pat's and Meridian. In the north, Montfort, Sengkang, and the Singapore Sports School. In the south, ACS Barker, Queensway, and Serangoon Garden. And in the west, Assumption English and Jurongville.
Meridian is Meridian JC, right?
Meridian Secondary School.
Okay, because Meridian,
strong. So why these specific locations, these specific schools? No idea.
No idea.
I mean, I know for a fact that in Meridian itself, they've been, Meridian as a whole, Meridian JC, Meridian Secondary, they've got like pretty good national titles. They won a lot of the national titles in the age category. St. Pat's has been developing a football, like in-house football academy for some time, getting proper like coaches to come in and train and things like that and put the boys out for like more competitive games, even if it's not during tournament time as well. So they kind of grown from that aspect of it for the East Side schools, from what I know. So I think it's maybe, and also I think they have a lot of interclass tournaments in St. Pat's that they, from there, they do the interclass and they pick up the players and they kind of progress it. There's some kind of a plan and development behind it as well.
Yeah, so apparently these schools will be assisted by coaches, both from La Liga and local football programs as well.
It looks nice on paper and all wonderful ideas, but so far, I don't want to get in trouble. But yeah, so far, nothing.
I mean, remember during our time, it was so much easier. You just had remember the Milo program?
Yep.
Yeah.
So anyone from any school, you're good enough, you're spotted to take part in the Milo program, right? The Milo trials, and then you progress from there.
And Milo trials was the best because when you go for Milo trials, there'll also be BL clubs. Milo truck, heaven on four wheels.
Yeah, man.
No, but I think there'll also be SBL clubs, or like back then was the SL clubs, will be there as well. So I know some of my mates got picked up to join Marine Castle, Geylang, go for trials as well. You know, so that's where it was in that aspect. And you're right, it's such a simple process. And made everyone, it was like the bus thing, right? If you got called up for a Milo trial, you kind of made it halfway there already.
Yeah, I mean, we talk all about meritocracy and all, right? But here, you know, you're segmenting these schools as they are.
Also, these schools have actually proper football pitches also. Who knows? Because I know Betts is a proper football pitch and all the stuff, the lights and all. So, I agree. I think go back to the Milo system, scout for players and bring them in. And get your best out of the best instead of just picking a handful of schools and saying, this is it, and pick it from there.
Yeah.
I mean, can't comment on speculation, right? So
it's speculation.
Yeah, so I've just been waiting for them to say something, but I've been disappointed. So,
I mean, they only have bad news so far, right? About the youth coach or something, the Aussie guy who, due to health issues and only to take up the job at Melbourne Victory. 2 days later. So far, nothing good has come out of it for now.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the SPL, right? I mean, I haven't heard anything about this season's SPL just yet. You guys?
It should kick off in March. Based on if you go by last year's schedule, it should kick off in March. So also doing a lot of transfer dealings and other clubs are still quiet. Like, Geylang has like what 7 players or 5 players?
I think I saw recently they just posted they started training already. So it looks like a lot of people, but it could be just camera work, right? So
I don't think so.
I think they've just started training. Might be much. You're right. No news yet. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, Geylang has, from what I know, they have definitely confirmed their new kits for this coming season. FBT again. I think there'll be another team that's going to be wearing FBT as well.
Tanjung Pagar, right?
Yes,
Tanjung Pagar. I saw like a leak of their video and all.
Yeah, so Geylang away is going to be in pink. So that's going to be interesting. Nice. Tanjung Pagar away is going to be in navy blue. But, well, as with all things, you can have all these, you know, home kits, away kits, but, you know, we need to see the actual team sign up and play for the SPL for this coming season, right?
Yeah, and also I think beyond that, I think make it accessible for people to purchase it also. Like, push it out there, push your merchandise, be shameless, so what? Just do what to get more people, more fans, to, especially after all we've gone through. And Balestier Castle has been buying players left, right, centre from Tanjung Pagar, building up a squad, strong squad as well. So, you know, we shall see.
Yeah, yeah.
got a new coach as well. So yeah.
Well, I guess that's all from me for this week's podcast. Hata, anything for boot hype coming up this week?
Nah, so I think it's new year. We have some boots lined up. I've been sitting on my video of me playing five-a-side, the first five-a-side in a long time in Singapore.
Road testing a new pair of boots? Or?
During that video, no. So I just broke out one of the older models of the Puma Future, which I really loved. There will be new reviews coming up. I can't reveal what they are yet. Some obscure, some we expect to be from one of the big brands. So let's see what happens.
Cool. Any final words for the first episode of 2022, guys?
No. Yeah, no. Man. Just big thank you to Jerome and the unofficial Singapore Football Podcast, right? Putting in the video, the time and effort to do a collaboration video from all different voices of football in Singapore, you know, showing the community strong as ever, saying what we have to say for the team that actually did pretty well, won the hearts back of the Singaporean football fans. So credit to Jerome and taking time off to do that.
Mm. Yeah, thanks to Jerome on the Singapore Football
podcast.
Yeah. What is it called now? Because
we've gone through so many changes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I think on Facebook.
We love you, Jerome. We'd love to have you on our show again, but
on Facebook they're
SG Football Podcast.
SG Football Podcast.
Yes.
Yep. They're known as SG Football Podcast.
Yeah. And on Instagram it's SG Football as well.
SG Football Podcast. Yeah.
SG Football Podcast. Yeah. So they've gone for unofficial. You know, S League, whatever. They're just the SG Football Podcast, right?
He's been verified. Football. He's been verified.
He's got the blue tick.
Yes, he's got the blue tick. He's going up there.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, guys. That's all from me. Signing off. We'll talk to you guys again next week.
Yeah. Stay safe, everyone. Take care.
Cheers, guys.